You are listening to BensTorah.com.
I'm a Talmud of the Rav. Some of you here studied with Rav Soloveitchik in his prime, as I did. And I can tell you, I walked away from the Rav with the feeling that intellectual dishonesty is worse than eating chazer on Yom Kippur. You can agree or disagree, but that's the feeling I had. And there are reasons why, because eating chazer on Yom Kippur, it's a sin, but you can do tshuva. But intellectual dishonesty is a verdorbenkeit in the individual. There's something the matter with him. So yesterday after my shiur, I believe it's your son, asked me, some people show on the internet that 100 years ago, there was no mechitza at the Kotel. Anyone who shows those pictures should be arrested immediately and sent to Iran for intellectual dishonesty. Of course there was no mechitza at the Kotel. The British government did not allow it. The people desperately wanted a mechitza, and they would not allow them to put a mechitza in. Similarly, I yet knew the man, Segel, from the old city, Zichrono Livracha, who blew shofar every year on Rosh Hashanah and was arrested right afterwards. They didn't allow shofar, they didn't allow a mechitza. They were more generous than the Israeli government, where if you pray on the Temple Mount today, you're arrested. Of course, you can kill on the Temple Mount. That is not a problem for the Arabic world, for Obama's friends. But to pray on the Temple Mount, but the British allowed you to pray, no shofar, no mechitza. So please, tell those people to be intellectually honest and not to show pictures like that. Show pictures when the state of Israel, was rejoined with the heart of its existence, the Kotel HaMaravi. Now, I have a very important topic today. You all know about the problems in Israel. The New York Times will not let you forget what's happening and the machleket and the religious controversy, etc. But there are a lot of positive achievements in the religious world in Israel, and that's what I want to talk about this morning. And I want to begin, as I've told my students over the generations, all my stories are true. I've lived everything. When the Mossad contacted us, the man who introduced us and briefed us and who I became very close to, our mafil, as they say in Hebrew, what's the word in English? Yeah. Our handler, fine. Aryeh Kroll later receives Pras Yisrael. So Aryeh Kroll was a very fascinating individual. He was the man who discovered, I write about it in Washington, if you don't believe what I write in English, you can read the book the Mossad put out about a year and a half ago in Hebrew, Menetiv HaDamama, which will tell you about the Rakefets and about the operation, but above all about Aryeh Kroll. Aryeh Kroll was a fascinating individual. I say he's the second greatest influence in my life, second only to Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Aryeh Kroll's father was a sheikhet. They ran away from Europe in the mid-30s. He grew up in Bnei Akiva, one of the founders of Kibbutz Sad, totally forgot about his Russian origins. At the end of 25 years working in the kibbutz awarded him a trip overseas. And Aryeh chose to go to Russia to see his two sisters who had survived the Holocaust. And Aryeh goes to Moscow, he could barely speak Russian, took him a few days, he understood, but you know, when you don't speak your native language for 25 years, it can start to vanish. And he saw the Jews, he saw what was happening, and it changed Aryeh's life. He went to see Ben-Gurion, he came up with the whole idea of taking people like Malkin and myself, who have dual identity, we're total Israelis, integrated on the Israeli scene. We speak Hebrew, we think in Hebrew, dream in Hebrew, curse in Hebrew, but really there are no curses in Hebrew. It's fulfilling Talmudic learning, ben nidah, ben zonah, suyat shlemot, mesechet yevamot, mesechet ketuvah, the last parak of Kedushin, Baruch Hashem, you cannot curse in Hebrew. On the other hand, we're Americans, the New York Yankees, and all that goes with it. He came up with that idea, and what the implications were, as I spoke about yesterday, It's just mystifying and divine what has happened with the return of Russian Jewry to the Jewish people. When I read Midrashim during the 1980s, from May 1980 through 1989, when the curtain started to be lifted and ultimately to be ripped away, the Iron Curtain. So we would have important matters to discuss. Some of them, I would say, border on life and death, certainly spiritually, physically too, with very deep implications, prisoners of Zion, etc. And then Aryeh would use me as a bouncing board for his ideas on religion, Torah, the contemporary religious Israeli scene. And Aryeh would tantalize me with stories about a chaver of his on the kibbutz, who's a Hasidic Rebbe. And he would describe via Geit Shabbos mit a shtreimel, with a shtreimel on top of his kippah shtrugah, with a bekisha. And he'd hack me ahead that the man's wife is a sister to the Vishnitz's Rebbe. And I would listen, you know, with one ear, Aryeh Kroll, Kibbutz Sad, with all due respect, it's a fabulous kibbutz, it's right on the border down south, you all know about it. My grandsons were stationed there when they went into Gaza 3 years ago during the war. And everyone knows Kibbutz Sad, but I wouldn't exactly believe that Hasidic Rebbeim are living on Kibbutz Sad. But I knew, Aryeh, you have to take seriously. He spoke the truth. He wasn't the man to tell jokes. In 1990, there was a headline in the Israeli paper, a new type of Hasidic Rebbe has moved to Gilo in Yerushalayim, Ruzhina Neinikel. His name is Rabbi Yisrael Friedman, 6 generations from the original Ruzhina for whom he's named. His wife is Taka, the sister of the previous Vishnitzer Rebbe, the aunt of the present 2 Vishnitzer Rebbeim, Reb Mendel, Reb Yisrael. And lo and behold, this is the Pushkana Rebbe, and Aryeh Kroll was telling me the truth. And it's a very fascinating story. They were Romanians, the man and woman, separate, went through the Holocaust with miracles, came out alive. After the war, they went in Aliyah, married in Palestine at the time, and went to an irreligious kibbutz, Reshafim, that had a large number of Romanian refugees. They remained from, he opened the shul there. The Vishnitzer Rebbe pleaded with him, said, Pasnish, do I have to translate Yiddish or Ichreta Mamaloshin Mifashtet? Okay. The younger generation, if you don't learn Yiddish, you can't. When I learned in Lakewood, they told me that Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah in Yiddish. And I absolutely believe them until today. Okay, even though I have great-grandchildren that are learning Gemara already, they don't speak a word of Yiddish, but sefelt, they mekenish Yiddish. In Yiddish. So, sepasnish, Yerin Meshafim, come to Bnei Brak. And the Rebbe finally made a compromise, the Pashkana Rebbe made a compromise with the Vishnitzer. He'll move to a religious kibbutz. And he was there for many years until he retired, and his son, who we'll talk about in a moment, convinced him it's time to leave the kibbutz and become a Rebbe again and do something for Klal Yisrael beyond the little kibbutz. He opened the shtibl in Gilo, and Zahafach Kalim, be Ritmet Uberet, I don't know how to translate that, not into Yiddish and not into English. It created currents, and people are going, all types, Bamishpacha, which I will not suspect of being a religious Zionist publication, had a big article about a year ago on the Pushkana Rebbe in Gilo. It showed you pictures of the Fabrengen, and at the Fabrengen you see this elderly gentleman in his 90s with a big shtreimel, a Ruzhina shtreimel. It's a different shape. I can tell you who's a Gera, who's a Belzer. You look at the shtreimel. I have a whole picture article of the different shtreimels and who wears what. And I'm being serious. And if La Rosh Hashanah and big kippah sluga, bigger than mine under the shtreimel, and his son stands eben un shteitzlein zun, and you see the Hasidim, a lot of Breslava, balei tshuva, dressed in Hasidic garb, and hundreds of kippot sugat. And here I have to bow my head and admit defeat. I am a Litvak. I may be the last of the Litvakin. I'm a dinosaur. I recognize it. I will not change. I really believe that to be a good Jew, you have to be Bucky and Shas and Paiskim. You have to be a walking Sefer Torah. You have to be a tremendous Yirei Shemayim. And you don't miss a minyan. Naftali, right or wrong, you don't miss a minyan. I'm saying he can testify. He sees me chapping at Ein Mincha Mariv, let alone Shachris. And Yerushalayim, it's a pleasure. We have all over. I can turn in any direction and find a minyan and a shul at any time of the day or night. But we've lost. Hasidus has conquered the world. As I mentioned yesterday, we don't have a Litvish yeshiva left in Chutz La'aretz. You look around at Lakewood today, you cannot distinguish one Talmud from the other Talmud. You look around at Mir, you look around at YU, the Chag HaSmicha. I get blamed for all the sins in Yeshiva University. Chliktif Tayin Dred, everyone identifies me. Rakefer is the ultimate, the product, Yeshiva University. I found out a number of years ago, Rabbi Revel, the founder, is my cousin. We're both Calvariskis. You can't believe the calls I got. The Chag HaSmicha, everyone is watching. It's streamed live. It's on YouTube, but you can pick it up on YU. Not only do most of the students wear black hats, but there's now a new minhag in YU that they sit one-third of the students and 90% of the Rosh Yeshiva are sitting there for 3.5 hours. Who can sit through such a long ceremony? Matan Torah was quicker than the Chag HaSmicha, believe me. And they're all wearing hats indoors. I never saw a Rosh Yeshiva in my life give the shiur with his hat on. Rabbi Aaron Cutler, the hat went off. There was he wore a plain yarmulke. Rabbi David Lifshitz, Hayudapeyashit, Abanashi yarmulke. The Rav, when you wear your hat, I always tell my students, if someone is wearing a hat and giving a shiur, it's a sign he wants to finish quickly and run out and say goodbye to the audience. So the world has changed. The Rav couldn't handle this. All of you know, I quote in my book, word by word, what the Rav had to say. Rebbetzin Sladowski was there when the Rav said this. It was in the Holes of Home, at a Sheva Brachas, where the Rav said, I can't understand what's happening. Everyone dresses the same, thinks the same, looks the same. This is not creative. This will not produce Gedolei Yisrael. All right, the Rav could not make his peace with this, but his humble Talmud, so many decades later, I have to make my peace, because to me, the most important thing is you should remain frum, Hashem, Torah, Mitzvot, and not breathe the air of Riverdale and all that has come out of it, as I spoke about yesterday and may allude to today. It's a terrible problem. Mindaf bleiben frum. We have to know the challenges of the Western world, but we have to remain faithful to Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valea, and all the generations until this very moment. In Israel, the same phenomenon is happening. Let alone the famous yeshiva, Mir, Panovich, everyone looks the same, but Hasidus. And here, there's a prediction, and I've read this, I'm not the first one to say this. The man who stood behind the Pashkana Rav, or Rebbe, Zayn Zun, and it's a picture to see, but there's one problem. It's during the week, it's not Shabbos, obviously, they're taking pictures. He's not wearing a bekesha. He's certainly not wearing a shtreimel. He's wearing a big kippah sruga, and he's dressed in the uniform of the Israeli Defense Forces, no less than a brigadier general, Tataluf Hoshea Friedman. not only a brigadier general, but he was responsible until a week ago for the entire miluim, the call-up system in the Israeli army, chas v'chalila, in case of emergency, in case of war, that the army can double its size within hours. This is an unbelievable responsibility. He stood on top of the pyramid for years, Brigadier General Hoshea Friedman. Time and again in the Army publication, which now has gone online, Bamachaneh, you would see pictures of the general with his tzitzis out, tzitzis and dreisen. This is the man. Next month, he just resigned from the army for one simple reason. Chodesh Elul will be the official hachtara, inauguration, installation of Hoshea Friedman as the next Pashkana Rebbe. And people predict he will attract thousands upon thousands of young men from the Hesde Yeshivat, young men who are studying in Merkaz, young men who are studying in all the yeshivas that identify formally with the religious Zionist movement, because the youth is anxious for Hasidus, a Rebbe, a leader, a guideline, a family, a social unit. What I spoke about yesterday, Enash Anshei Shlomeinu. So I have to tell you, this is a magnificent development across the board. The Litvisha world, the Vilna Gaon, the Biddle battles of 200 plus years ago, we have lost. I daven my home shul is Ohel Rivka, the oldest shul in Kiryat Shmuel, one of the biggest shuls in Yerushalayim. All of you know when the shul was established, Rav Kook came, it was 1932, Rav Kook was still functioning, he laid the cornerstone of that shul. And when I came in Aliyah, moved to Rav Berlin, I've been davening in that shul 49 years at the exact same seat where I sat 49 years ago, and I've seen thousands upon thousands of people who davened there, Gedolei Yisrael, one after another, Ashkenaz, Ala Litvakin, oh my. And today on Shabbos, if the old timers would come back, the Chiyat HaMetim, there would be riots on the street of Kiryat Shmuel and Rehavia. Why? I daven at the 630 minyan. The 630 minyan goes back to 1932. Then there's an 815 minyan, goes back to 1962. And at 10 o'clock, Nishfa Kenan Gedach, there's a Chabad minyan. Oh my, and they not only daven after the davening, you were never allowed to bring food into the shul. This is on the side, it was called the shtibel. That's because the minyanim in the morning, 5:36, 6:37, so you have the shul, you have the shtibel, the shul, the shtibel. You weren't allowed to bring any food into the shul. When they sit down with a brink, min retibbe from the Rebbe, min lernet a shtikl tanya, likutei Torah, min drinkt a lachayim, a kugel, the world is conquered by the Hasidim. And as an old Litvak, I have to salute in dignity, because what's important to me is one value: Torah should thrive. It's one positive story. But I want to come to another positive story that somehow no one in America calls your attention to. And I call upon the New York Times to do some investigative reporting and put this story bifnei am ve'eda. My dear friends, you have fought a bitter battle here in the United States. I would never dream this would happen. I still recall when the Jewish Theological Seminary, which begun as an Orthodox institution, 1887, read the preamble to their Constitution. Who would ever dream what would happen at JTS, that halacha would be entirely discarded? Now, JTS had one faculty member who was heads and shoulders above anyone else on their faculty, and heads and shoulders above almost everyone on every yeshiva faculty in the world. He was a first cousin of the Chazon Ish. He, in his own personal life, was a tzaddik yesod olam. He was a gon adir, and that, of course, is the late Professor Rav Shmuel Lieberman. Second marriage, married the Rav's cousin, was related to the Rav by marriage, Rav Shmuel Lieberman. The whole story of what he's doing at the seminary is not for now, but in 1940, he joined the seminary faculty. Rav Shmuel Lieberman, by the 70s, the feminist revolution, the sexual revolution, the United States going under, liberalism, what you're suffering from now, people would don't even want to say it aloud, but the enmity, the hatred, a conservative with a small c was elected president, the demonstrations, the vulgarity, women rabbis, women can smoke. I remember when Virginia Slims was arrested for smoking in public, right or wrong. Women can smoke, women go to high school, women go to college, women go to graduate school. Arad Kefet has to go to a doctor, some of his doctors are his own students and they happen to be women. Wow. Women rabbis, equality. And Shmuel Lieberman said absolutely not. And the youth at the seminary quoting the Midrash on the children of Aaron HaKohen, Matai Yamutu Oto Zekeinim, when will the elders drop dead and will take over? And that's exactly what happened when Rav Shmuel Lieberman died on a plane going to Eretz Yisrael. Within the year, the whole seminary changed. The entire Talmudic faculty had to resign and leave. Women rabbis, equality, homosexuals ultimately, Mimilel Umipilel. And now, what can I tell you? A good deal of the so-called, what they call Orthodox world, Rav Kefet is a fanatic, opposed to women rabbis, equality. And I have to tell you, al pi halacha, women can be as great as Bruria. They can know Kol HaTorah Kula. And some of you recall my lectures on feminism. I spent a year on it in the Kollel, maybe 20 years ago already. They're all on YU Torah. Many times we paskin like Bruria, against Rabbi Yehuda, against her own husband, against Rabbi Meir, halacha kebruria. Of course women can be learned, but there's a difference between men and women. The gestalt of the rabbinate has to be someone who can do geirut, who can be an aid, l'kiyum davar. When we need aidim at a wedding, when we need a beitin for geirut, there women play no role. There's a gestalt of a rav that a male can fulfill entirely. That type of rabbinate a woman cannot fulfill. There's a question of tzniut. We have forgotten what tzniut is about. But let me tell you a little story that happened in the Israeli army that shook up anyone who was intellectually honest. The story had wide publicity. We'll maybe reach the army later this morning. The army is undergoing big changes. The whole population is shifting, and there are more and more religious Jews in the army. And not just like my grandchildren who all wear kippot strugot, they're haredim coming in. And plenty of the kippot strugot, hardalim, haredim datiyim lumiyim. And this officer comes in to lecture, and she was a good-looking female. And I used the word good-looking, as I said yesterday, if we wouldn't have the concept of a good-looking female, none of us would be sitting here. It's an open Gemara. Chickens didn't lay eggs. It's a Gemara in Yuma, a Gemara in Sanhedrin, and you'll find many Medrash Rabbah that says the same thing. Thank God we have a concept of men and women. I just told someone this morning that Bamishpacha, sins against the Torah by not publishing pictures of women. We raise children who don't know how to interact with the opposite sex. And we have more sexual crimes than ever today in all aspects of the Torah world. Very important to educate a kid. Al kenya zovishet daviv imo v'davat b'ishto v'hayu l'basar echad. This is the way God made the world. Give him a sense of values, a sense of understanding, a sense of commitment. Okay, so this lady comes in and gives the lecture, and there's one fella there in the crowd who was an officer's training course. He keeps his eyes down. So after the lecture, the commander of the program comes over to this fella who kept his eyes down. You embarrass the lecturer. And he says, I embarrass the lecturer? You should have heard what the other Chayalim said about her back here in the barracks. To quote the President of the United States of America, quote, locker talk, end quote. Know what I'm talking about? You read the newspapers, live in America? Trump, verstehst du nicht? And the person rebuking the soldier who kept his eyes down walked away, had nothing to say. I embarrassed her? You should have heard what the other people in this room had to say about her demeanor, her deportment, her looks, right here in the locker room. So this is not involved. I don't want to be in a shul. I can tell you an interesting story that I was zeichet to give the same psak as for Baron Lichtenstein. My eldest son-in-law, who was in the army for 20 years, is president of the shul for many years, as he says. He's the bottle washer and cleaner, but he's the president, runs the shul. And my Einiklach grew up in that shul. That family, their gabayim, their chazanim, their bal korei, fabulous, fabulous individuals. So the shul has a big machloikis. We're already affected by the winds from Riverdale. These are Dafka people from lived in Riverdale originally. And they want a woman to give the drasha, take turns with the men. Why only men? Why not a woman once a month? So my son-in-law asked me what I would paskin. I said, paskin very simple. You finish davening, you make kiddush, and then if you want, you can have a woman speak 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later, not in the formal synagogue setting. Anyway, the shul put it to a vote, and unanimously, they don't allow women to speak, and that particular family left the shul, but some other families who threatened to leave came back b'shalom. A few months ago, there was an interview with Esti Lichtenstein, what's her married name? Rosenfeld, I believe?
Rosenberg.
Esti, I know, is Esti Lichtenstein, the Migdalos, the head of Migdalos. So they interviewed Esti, and one of the questions they asked her, what would your father have to say about a woman speaking, giving the sermon in shul? And Esti answers, quote, I couldn't believe my eyes. My father said, after davening, you split up. 20 minutes later, you reconvene. And then, if you wish, for those who want to hear, if the woman has something to say, let her give a lecture. But you see, a woman can be a giant of Torah, but thank God, she remains a woman. The mystique, the image she casts, is feminine. A man, halavai, he should be a giant of Torah. All right, he can cast the image of a rav. And if you want titles, I already gave titles. I'm jealous of Chabad. Chabad totally solved this problem. And I've seen Chabad all over the world, from Russia to Australia to South America, South Africa, Canada, Israel, Shaluach, and Shlucha. The Rebbe sent him, the Rebbe sent her. Many times the woman is a bigger star than the man. You'll see that when you travel, she's a live wire. He's a little bit quiet, a little bit withdrawn. Sometimes it's the opposite, but there's never machloket. They each know their role. I've said that what we need in big synagogues, RA and SA, rabbinic advisor, spiritual advisor. The men go to the rabbinic advisor, the women to the spiritual advisor, who should be a woman. And we should have an added law, and no one listens to me. Halavai they would listen. In this day and age, in the year 2018, and I'm saying that purposely, Eisa Chacham Harawet Hanolad, in the year 2018, we should absolutely forbid male rabbis, spiritual rabbis, to advise women. We've had too many problems. A woman needs advice, a get, separation, aguna, children, health. There are now enough learned women, and I have my own Talmidot, who I would send women to, on the highest level of learning in Yirat Shemayim, but they are not rabbis. Rabbinic advisor, spiritual advisor. Avraham Yitzhak and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. But let me go further. What you don't realize is that in the state of Israel, the Haredi world, willy-nilly, has totally taken the lead and solved this quagmire. Totally. It's beyond words what has happened in the last 30 years. Tell me, what makes a rabbi today? Could Moshe Rabbeinu be the Rav of Shaarei Tefillah? Could Moshe Rabbeinu be the Rav of Fifth Avenue Synagogue? Absolutely not. Moshe Rabbeinu, a kfat peh, couldn't speak, and one of the main characteristics we want from a spiritual leader is the ability to speak. Right or wrong, give a drasha. In the state of Israel today, the greatest drashot, the most famous drashot, the ones that are most widely quoted and given to the maximum amount of people and go online and the YouTube and all over the world, all the great dashanim in Israel, change the word, are dashaniyot, are women. Right or wrong? And it all began, Rabbi Yoshev's daughter, Rabbi Chaim Kanyevsky's wife. I'm not talking about why you people now. I'm not talking about people from Riverdale. I'm talking about Gidole, Gidole Yisrael. Batsheva Kanyevsky? Who was she? Books have been written. Even Otsko had to publish pictures of women in the book about her life. Misora, they published under a different label, but it's Otsko. She reached out. Men and women waited online to get her bracha. She started the Hafrashat Challah with women. She dashened, she spoke. When she passed on, Zichrona Tzadeket LeBracha, her husband, Rav Chaim Kanyevsky, appointed, has only one son, many daughters, Leah Kaldetsky. He said, of all my daughters, she has the ability of my mother. But that's only the start. You've all heard the name. In Israel, it's world famous. Yamima Mizrahi. She was a classmate of one of my daughters in Chorev. Brilliant lady, lawyer, Tawenet, Lamdanit Mufheket. Preaching, teaching, reaching out, introducing new words into the Hebrew language. When I did basic training, I mastered, remember when you do basic, they test your Hebrew. If you're not born in Israel, they want to be sure that I'm going to get someone in the army who will hold the gun backwards and not understand one command. You understand? It's life-threatening. So I did, I passed the test, Baruch Hashem. The little chayelet who gave me the test, this is going back to 75 perhaps, the little chayelet, the young chayelet, she fainted. I got 100 on the test. She says to me, we have Israelis. They don't get 100. You speak with an accent. I almost killed her. I said, I should have never said this. I said, you should know, from the age of 12, I've read more Hebrew than English. That's the truth. I was in B'nai Akiva, and I got a paper from Israel. She was like stupefied.
You are listening to Ben's Torah.
Okay. Then I do basic training, and the commander says, we have to clean our guns. Tanakeh kaneshek, ani rotze shekol haneshek yiyeh fix. Fix. A new Hebrew word. How the heck they got that from English? Fix. Fix. You understand? That's Hebrew today. My grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, understand? Tanakeza, fix. Ah, Yemima has introduced two words into the Hebrew language. Tremendous talks, femininity, the two words, style and shopping. She speaks to the ladies in their language. She's famous for this. Divrei Torah, brilliant. But she understands a lady wants to dress fashionably, style. We men, Chassidishe Yunga Light here, we're dressing the same way they dressed 300 years ago, right or wrong. All right, we're proud of it. I make a compromise. I change my shirt occasionally, okay. Women, style. Shopping. When I want to relax, I go to the Yankee website. I become a kid again. A Talmud just told me off, a wise aleck. He says, Rebbe, it's Aveda Zari. He was born in Russia, came to America. A whole story, nice boy, nice man. He's 36 and still trying to get smicha. And he should already have smicha, but he'll get there. And he says, Rebbe, it's Aveda Zari. I say, this is Aveda Zari? This is refuah. I got to deal with life and death issues, women in the rabbinate, etc., things in Russia. When I watch the Yankees, I'm not watching the judge, Mr. Shofet. I'm watching, that's DiMaggio. That's Hendrick in right, Keller in left. I'm a kid again. And then I said, you call that Avaita Zara, Baron Lichtenstein, Reb Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Reb Yehuda Altusky. They knew every average out of the 30s and 40s. When I eulogized Reb Baron, everyone said, you're the owner who gave a decent test, but you described him as a human being. What did I say, among other things? That Reb Baron was the last person alive who could give you the starting lineup for the Chicago Cubs in 1945, the last time they were in the World Series before last year. He was a kid in Chicago. We often spoke about Phil Cavaretta. Knew how many of you know who the Taliano was, Phil Cavaretta, first baseman, his classic year. Oh, wow. Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you another name. I'm going to quote something from her book. I'm overwhelmed by this lady. Very well known in Israel, Noah Yaron Dayan. If you haven't heard the name, make believe you did, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Noah Yaron was a TV personality. She had been in the army, Galei Tzahal, the army radio station, TV, loved by everyone, knew absolutely nothing about Judaism like most of the kids raised in North Tel Aviv. It's a challenge to us. I can't use the word she was married. Actually, in her biography, the Haredi world can't use it because she describes her relationship with the man who became her husband, Yuval Dayan. They were together. He was writing scripts for TV. They did not lack for money. Suddenly, and you know, life in Israel, here you wake up, I don't know how many of you jump for the news, I wake up every morning at 4:15, 4:30, all right, I make the Chatat Torah, the Vilna Gaon, whatever. I do what I have to do according to the Vilna Gaon. I start learning. But at 5 o'clock, the news. And you gotta have, in Israel, the news is the news. We live under a certain tension. I need not tell you where we live. The helicopters go by on Shabbos. We go to our terrace to see where the helicopters are going. If they're going to the Knesset, all right, it's a sign. Nothing of great importance. They want to drink a l'chaim. But if they go to Hadassah, you know already something has happened. The other Friday night, we heard the ambulances go by because we live on the main road to Hadassah Shaare Tzedek. We knew already something happened, but we couldn't find out in Shabbos because the neighborhood has changed so. Siz nishta kein Shabbos night. Shabbos night means news you get from your neighbor who heard the radio. There's no one hearing the radio anymore. So only we found out on Shabbos by accident because my daughter had a nephew over who's in the army, a young kid, a tzaddik, a fabulous kid, and he knew something had happened because his unit was activated. So there's tension in Israel. Here you live, all right, the tension. Obama met with the Russians, his son met with the Russians, Kushner danced with the Russians. As I said yesterday, it's a new world for me because I don't find in the Rambam and Anissa that a guy can't talk to a Russian guy. I don't see it in the Rambam, maybe I'm wrong. But in Israel, there's tension. So she writes about this, I'm quoting her now. So she and her boyfriend, her partner decided, we gotta get away from Israel, who can take all this damn tension? So they went to the travel agent, we need someplace close, we can't be gone too many days, we're on radio or on TV. What would you recommend? So the travel agent says, Amsterdam, Holland. You see the museums. So they buy first class tickets, they are business class tickets, and they shoot over to Holland, and they go to the museums. And they see Jews walking in Holland, living in Holland, not far from the Rembrandt and all that's there. There's a Jewish section. Oy, we got to get away from this. Gam kan yesh yehudim. So they go to the train station, and they ask the guy at the train station, where's the furthest part north in Holland that's quiet and away from it all? And he tells them, take this train, get off at the last stop. It's December. Kislev, they take the train, they get off at the last stop. And they go over to the person, the station master, and they ask him, where's there a hotel nearby? And he laughs at them, he says, it's winter. They're speaking English, obviously. It's winter. But he says, oh, you're stuck here, there's no more train going back tonight to Amsterdam. I'll go talk a block away, there's a little hotel, maybe the owner will open up a room for you. And he says, take care of the station while I'm gone. He walks away, they're now in charge of the station, he comes back 10 minutes later, and he says, sit here for a half hour and you'll go over, he'll open up a room for you. They go over a half hour later, and the man says, you know, Yekes, living in Holland, it's next to Germany, give me a minute, I want to go upstairs and check. And he goes upstairs, and they speak English to him, obviously, the international language, and as he's coming down the steps, he hears them speaking Hebrew. And he comes down, his name is Jacob, and he says to them, you're Jews? They say, yes, we're Israelis. He says, come into my office. Takes them into the office, opens the office. Hanukkah candles are burning in the office. And she said at that moment, she looked at her husband. He looked at her. And they said, we can't run away. Like Yonah Hanavi. And that's the start of their return to Yiddishkeit. Today she's a very much sought after lecturer. She's written 3 books. The most famous one is Mikimi Me Offer Down. It's a beautiful volume. And they live in Ramat Beit Shemesh. They have 7 children. And she's been interviewed many times. And she says when she looks at her children, and this is the beauty of life that God gave us, the children have no idea how much the parents struggle. To them, Yiddishkeit is as natural as eating blueberry pie in the United States. Second nature. Sival gedachm gas. It's on the street. And she's a very famous lecturer, very sought after, not just in Haredi areas, Breslov areas, but the Chadali, the Tzionim Datiyim, they absolutely love her lectures. But that's not all. People compliment me on certain things I did in my life. So, you know, perhaps one of the biggest compliments I get is that I brought Nechama Leibowitz, the greatest woman who lived in the 20th century, to teach in Gris Kollel. And to know Nechama, I could give an endless lecture. I could spend more than a year on Nechama. She was something else. And with all the knowledge, she was a Litvische Rosh Yeshiva, a Litvische Kop, Litvische insight, there was not a trace of femininity in her. It's an amazing, amazing. This lady, she said, I would give away all my learning to have had children. She had no children. And we were very close. That's all I can tell you. We taught, I can tell you endless stories, but it's not for now. But today, there's another lady. No, tell me who. Every Wednesday night, Heichol Shlomo. 500, 600 people, at times the president of the state of Israel, Ruby Rivlin, Sivan Rahav Meir. You have to hear this woman. She is called the second Nechama Leibowitz of our generation. And what a lady. Raised totally religious home. Brilliant genius. Graduated high school at 14, college at 18, and then started the army. Already in high school, a kid, 15, 16, start of college, she started to ask questions. And she becomes a first-rate Talmid Chacham, Talmidah Chachamar, I should say, and marries into an amazing family. If you know the Meir brothers, her husband is a personality. She and her husband are TV personalities, radio personalities, writers for the newspapers, and she is the lecturer par excellence on Parshat HaShavua and tying it in with reality, with realia, with what is happening around us. What a couple. Her brother-in-law is an unbelievable Baal Tefillah, Meir. If you see the name Meir, it's worth going to a hotel to hear him be Mekabel Shabbos. I heard him Mekabel Shabbos by accident. He lives in my neighborhood. He wandered into the shul I was davening that Friday night, and they were mechaber him with the Amid. I couldn't believe my ears. I came home. Malka was angry. Why didn't you tell me you had such a Baal Tefillah? We didn't know in advance. He wandered in, and he did us a favor by taking the Amid. My dear friends, I can go on and on. In Israel, they have solved the problem. Women can rise. We can't put them back into the kitchen and the house and the bedroom. They've come out. Whether it's good or bad, we can debate eternally. But this is the reality of life. And just as a woman can be a heart surgeon today and can be a prime minister, she can be very knowledgeable in Torah Tashem. But it has to be in the context of Torah, of Chazal, of our traditions, a shaluach, a shlucha, a rabbinic advisor, a spiritual advisor. In Israel, problem solved. Thank you to the Haredi world. Let me go a step further. This is for those of you who are a little involved in high-level Jewish studies. And let me honor Ralph Silverman with a story about his great-great-grandfather, which I have told my students it cannot be. You'll see why in a second. But you all know the history of Orthodoxy in Germany. Very fascinating story, the rebirth, how they did it. Shinshrafol Hirsch deserves all the credit, perhaps single-handedly, against all odds. When he came to Frankfurt, barely had a minyan. The mikveh, as Rav Hirsch describes it in his own words, was in an alleyway fit for the passage of swine, quote, end quote. My wife saw a mikveh like that when I was rabbi in 1961, entered the rabbinate, Ballykinwood, Pennsylvania. We had to go to, the mikveh was in South Philly. God have mercy on what a modest Jewish woman had to go through to go to the mikveh in South Philly. Now you can understand why there wasn't a frum Jew in Philadelphia until modern times. There was another great person, came after Rav Hirsch. She was Hungarian origins, Rav Israel Hildesheimer. So a student once showed me an article where in the article they write that Rav Hirsch and Rav Hildesheimer didn't get along to the extent that when they passed each other on the street, one would cross over to the other side of the street. So I told my student, I know why they didn't get along. I'll tell you why in a second. But I don't believe the article. So he looks at me, Rebbe, why not? Because Rav Hirsch lived in Frankfurt and Rav Hildesheimer lived in Berlin. I don't believe someone living in Frankfurt and someone living in Berlin had that many opportunities to pass each other on the street. But what I'm referring to, of course, is Rav Hirsch had a very traditional view of what I call traditional Talmud Torah. His approach was no different than the way they studied Torah throughout the ages, throughout the millennium. He was reviving, resuscitating the traditions of earlier generations. Rav Hildesheimer was already a product of modernity. He had a PhD, and he had a Chochmat Yisrael approach, a scientific Jewish scholarship approach. In English, I just translated. In German, Wissenschaft des Judentum. In Hebrew, they say today, Chochmat Yisrael, although decades ago they said, Mada HaYahadut. It's a more scientific approach. And throughout the last 150 years within the Torah world, these two approaches have worked side by side, but have never been integrated. As a matter of fact, JTS began devoted to science, and they had very great professors. Professor Shaul Liebman, a prime example, who was the greatest scholar of Chochmat Yisrael in the entire world, just as Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik may have been the greatest Litvish Rosh Yeshiva of his times. In Israel today, there is a synthesis that on a postgraduate level, it merges into one with magnificent, magnificent results. And I'll give you an example what I'm talking about. Malka Dobbins in a shul named Jakar. It's of British origins, well-known shul. A little bit different than the average shul in Yerushalayim. And occasionally there's a Baal Tefillah, Shai Wuzna. This Shai Wuzna is a big Talmud Chacham, a product of yeshiva. He later gets a PhD. He just issued a magnificent work on Reb Shimon Shkop, the Grodna Rosh Yeshiva, the famous Reb Shimon Shkop, who taught at Yeshiva University, what is today Yeshiva University, for 1 year, 27-28. Pictures of him appear in Rothkopf's book on Rabbi Revel. You'll see Eidut Nemana. Magnificent work on Rav Shimon Shkop viewed from the concept of jurisprudence of the legal systems in the Western world. Because Rav Shimon Shkop, his greatest contributions were in Nezikin, and they take all these laws and put them together, and they view the way Reb Shimon would decide in legal questions how you can integrate Reb Shimon's outlook with contemporary general law. A brilliant work. A Jew, Moritz Kahana, his beard is down to the floor with payas like this, product of yeshiva, chassidish world, PhD. What a doctorate published, Meinoda B'Yehuda Ad L'Chatam Sofa. He deals with the decisions, the psakim of the Noda B'Yehuda, and how it affected the thinking of the Chatam Sofa. It is a riveting piece of scholarship and Talmud Torah. And I'll give you a final example. You'll recognize the name, a very famous rabbinic name, Rav Dr. Shlomo Tukachinsky, also a product of Yeshiva, PhD, and he did a masterpiece on the altar of Slabodka, on Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, the man who built Slabodka, the great-grandfather or the great-granduncle of the Rosh Yeshiva from Chicago who went to Mir, the famous Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, who died a young man a few years ago. What a scholarly, wonderful, wonderful piece of work. And we're zeicher in Eretz Yisrael that if Rav Hirsch would meet Rav Hildesheimer, they wouldn't have to walk on the other sides of the street. There is a bridge, there is a merger, there is a synthesis on the highest level. It is magnificent, it is beautiful, it is enlightening. And finally, let me make one final point. You all know about this. This has reached the New York Times. Israel was declared, you're familiar with the Declaration of Independence, a democratic and Jewish state. My mentor in B'nai Akiva, Meir Kahana, already called attention that this is contradictory. If you're Jewish, you can't be democratic. We can't put Shabbat to a vote. We can't put Taretz Mishpacha to a vote. We can't put Kashrut to a vote. And if you're democratic, then the people count and their will counts. And you can look at Torah and look at it askance and abscond from its demands. How do you solve this? The mayor raised this problem. We've lived with the problem since 1948. The Supreme Court, in a classic ruling which shows the problem black and white, it's a number of years ago already, people in Israel wanted to import treif meat. Right now in Israel, all meat imported has to be under the auspices of the chief rabbinate. It wound up in Supreme Court, and the people argued very simply, democracy, constraint of trade, a monopoly in English, a monopole in Hebrew. Their argument, absolutely in consonance with democratic state. The state argued, we're a Jewish state. And to import chasa, to import tafis, goes against the heart of Judaism. And here we had a miracle. It's one of the few times that the Supreme Court acted with Torah sense. And the majority decision was written by Aaron Barak, no less, who's not exactly a Ben Torah. And he wrote that it's true from the point of view of democracy, what counts is the right of merchandise, freedom, no constraints, but in this case, a Jewish state negates the democratic value, and all imports should be in consonance with the chief rabbinate. And that's a prime example. But I want to tell you what no one ever dreamt of, not Meir, not anyone back in the 40s, the 50s, for obvious reasons. Democracy is the greatest friend that Torah has in Israel. It is very thwarting, frustrating. It causes Haaretz and its followers endless heartache. Because in a democracy, each and every one in this room has one vote. From the point of view of modernity, of the modern world, half of us shouldn't be able to vote. We're primitive. We're fanatics. We're throwbacks to the ghetto. But in a democracy, everyone has one vote. And all of you know, a year ago the study came out, and other studies come out, the predictions, what will be by 2020, 2030, but all the predictions say the same thing. The overwhelming majority of the Jews living alat mata kodesh will be Shomer Shabbos. And a very big majority of these Jews will be Haredim, which frightens the Haaretz crowd no end. And what you see happen in Israel is the Haredi world is breaking out of the ghetto. No one wants to be a charity case. The Western world beckons. You can come out, you can get education. You can be successful. Not everyone can sit and learn day and night and be a Talmud Chacham. Not everyone is cut out to be a Rebbe. It's the greatest tragedy in the world when someone becomes a Rebbe for lack of choice. I always tell my students, if you're going to teach, you have to love every student you teach. My wife often said to me, how can you love every student? You have Rishayim, you have Tzaddikim. I said, you're right, I have students who are murderers, I have students who are terrible students, etc., etc. Among the Tzaddikim, but I teach the souls. Even a person who sins has a soul. A Rebbe has to see what that student can become with guidance, love, inspiration. All right, today it doesn't work. When I taught at a high school age, Rabbi Flaun, Rabbi Kirschenbaum, all right, at that age, I can have influence on my students. Today it's just the opposite. I walk into class, everyone is older than I am, and they're looking at me, Rebbe, to get a beard, pay his black clothes, dress with dignity, speak in third person, treat yourself in accordance with your stature, which we believe you deserve. And I can tell them, go fly a kite. I am Aaron Rakefet from the Bronx originally. Okay, you are my, here my students. All right, I see already who's know me. I see who's applauding. Baruch Hashem. But you see, the Haredi world, why is it able to come out today? Because they're able to go into the army, they're able to go into the workforce, and they're more Haredim. And they're not taking off their beards, and they're not taking off their payas. And they're going back to the Rebbe Shittish on Shabbos, and they're remaining Haredim. And this is the beauty of democracy. Each person has one vote. And I can assure you that Netanyahu, who's not the Tzaddik Hadar, but it's very interesting how, with what's going on with the Kotel, he backed off from desecrating our holiest place in the world. And I am certain he didn't back off because he had Gilui Eliyahu. He didn't back off because he heard his shir from Harav Rakefet. He backed off because he counted the votes. And he wants to establish a government next time around as well. And this is the beauty of democracy. And I say to my mentor, Meir Kahana, if you're listening, today I am proud to say we are both a Jewish state and a democratic state, and they synthesize and complement one another. So let me summarize. A lot of good is happening in Israel. As I said at the end of my first year yesterday, some of your children are there, your grandchildren, you're welcome to join us. We're building a country. We're not just Social Security statistics, but each one who goes on Aliyah has a vote, and he goes into the with the ballot, b'kedusha u'b'tahara. It's a different feeling than when you vote here. And the impact, the children, the grandchildren, the numbers. And as Yaron Dayan said so beautifully, our children have no idea of how their grandparents struggled, although I do say occasionally the grandchildren thank us that we made the decision to come in Aliyah. But it's good for them to grow up normal, healthy, and to take it for granted and just go further and build with dignity. So much good is happening. The Pashkana Rebbe, you're going to hear. I predict that even though only a fool and a child predicts today, according to the Gemara and Baba Batra, I don't mind being a fool or a child. I predict that you will hear about the Pashkana Rebbe and thousands of kippah, srugar, chassidim, breslava, chabatnikim will gather around him in dignity. the concept of the women, it's unbelievable what the OU and the RCA decided as official policy. It represents exactly the teachings I espoused in my lectures years ago. And here's a living example. Women can absolutely express themselves, and we have to learn from the Haredi world how to do it in dignity and with the context of Torah Hashem Tumah. The story of Chochmat Yisrael and Talmud Torah and the blending of Rabbis Hildesheimer and Hirsch, it's a magnificent story. That already is for a higher level of learning, but I can tell you when I opened up the volume on my Notably Yehuda L'Chacham Sofer, I could not put it down. 500 plus pages, magnificent scholarship. And it taught me a great deal in understanding the Chacham Sofer. I have a granddaughter-in-law who's a great-granddaughter of the Chacham Sofer, in understanding her great-grandfather's way in Psak. The Haredim, even the New York Times has to admit, they're coming out of the ghetto and coming out in dignity, the men, the women, and remaining true to their roots. And I want to conclude, especially what we're talking about is a process ongoing. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Chet Amid Bet, the Gemara says, "My dechtiv, zesefer toldat adam, pasuk in Bereishit." What does it mean? This is the book of the happenings of man. And the Gemara says, "Melameid sheharo Hakadosh Baruch Hu dor dor v'dashav dor dor v'chachamav." And the Gemara says that Hakadosh Baruch Hu showed Adam Harishon every generation who the wise people would be, who the leaders would be, who the sages will be, and the Rishonim interpret this so beautifully that every generation needs its own type of leadership, needs its own type of wise man. What was good 100 years ago may not necessarily be successful today. And this is why the Gemara stresses each generation will have the leaders, the sages, who are suited to that generation, who will be able to speak the language of the generation and influence the generation. And Baruch Hashem, in the state of Israel, we're achieving a generation of chachamim, of sages, of leaders, of Torah personalities who understand the Torah world, the contemporary world, the Israeli world, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we will only continue to go further and further. Lahavdil Torah ulahavira.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.